Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the 9th episode of FS Talks, the podcast that brings you the latest news and chats with industry leaders every week on Friday mornings. Today's podcast, hosted by myself, Phil Creed. I am co-founder and director of FSCom, which is a boutique regulatory advisory firm to the financial services industry. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Jesse Spiro. Jesse is Global Head of Policy and Regulatory Affairs at Chainalysis. Morning, Jesse. Brilliant to have you.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Philip. It's a little early for me, but I'm happy to be awake and seizing the day and certainly to be here speaking with you.
Brilliant. Listen, Jesse, for the audience, would you mind giving a brief intro on Chainalysis and what is your role in the company? What do you do?
Sure. So Chainalysis is a blockchain forensics and investigative services firm. We were born in 2014, actually as the result of the Mt. Gox hack. Many of you will be familiar with the Mt. Gox hack. It was the largest in crypto history to date. And after that occurred, our co-founders got together and realized that there was a gap in relation to the ability to kind of track and trace the flow of funds in the crypto space, and specifically in the relation to illicit funds. So that's how Chainalysis was born. And today, Chainalysis supports customers all across the globe, over 300 customers in total. And we support, the private sector, obviously cryptocurrency exchanges and businesses within the space. We support regulators and governments, and we support law enforcement, as well as financial institutions. So really all of the verticals and organizations and entities that exist within the ecosystem. And for my role, I head up global policy and regulatory affairs. So any engagements that we have kind of across all of those verticals in relation to regulation, which, as we'll speak about today, is certainly emerging and developing, engaging with all of those parties internally, taking the regulation and making sure that we apply that in relation to our product and services to support our clients, in relation on the private side to compliance, and on the kind of public sector side to enforcing. And that's my remit and my role.
Brilliant. I suppose flipping on to regulation, as you know, is what we're here to talk about. Like, we've seen a lot of global sort of regulators like FATF and the local regimes implementing the Fifth Money Laundering Directive, which came in the UK in 2020. FATF in particular, their annual review is coming up at the end of this month, and the expectation is that there's going to be some new guidance. What do you think are going to be the key takeaways from this? And I believe you're involved in the members, are you? So could you give us sort of an update on how the progress has been leading up to sort of the conference later on this month?
Sure. I'm happy to do that. So in relation to FATF, I've been plugged in to FATF really in relation to crypto since its infancy. We put out when they had a call for public consultation, which was in, I believe, February, it may have been of last year or the year prior, actually, I think, we put out a response to that. I was at the private sector consultative forum before the regulations, the FATF virtual asset regulations, were formally adopted, which was this past summer. And since then have been connected to both the secretariat and many of the member states as well. And in relation to kind of implementation and what that was looking like. And so I think when we're talking about progress, you have two sides, obviously, right? You have progress that's been made by the private sector, and then you have progress that's been made by the member states and the FATF style regional bodies as well. For the private sector, I think while this was certainly contentious in relation to implementation of the virtual asset recommendation, specifically one component, which many of your listeners will probably already be familiar with, which was the travel rule implementation. The kind of sending and receiving of originator and beneficiary information over a certain threshold. And, there's been many concerns around that. So when it comes to progress, for the private sector, I think for many of the recommendations, you've seen great progress in relation to implementation of many of those requirements. In terms of implementation of the travel rule itself and being in compliance with travel rule, I think that, you know, there has been some progress, certainly, you know, a number of solutions for the actual transmission of that data have been identified, right? And have been raised. You know, there have been a number of different working groups and bodies that have been participating on that. You know, the InterVASP messaging standards were just released, I think, a little over a month ago, which is standards in relation to, you know, specifically language that will be utilized in the transmission. And that was a real kind of group effort, I would say, you know, over, I think there were over 100 participants in relation to the InterVASP messaging standards, and many of them were representatives of their organizations or large industry bodies. Historically, you know, this industry, I think, has been relatively disjointed in relation to that kind of interaction. So I think that that's certainly promising. In relation to compliance itself, however, with the travel rule, you know, very few, if any, are in compliance of travel rule itself, or even some of the requirements yet. So it will be interesting to see how that's measured in relation to the public sector, the member states, right, and implementation and what that looks like. You know, a number of the member states have already implemented their local regulation, if you will, that aligns very closely with BATIF. I would say in relation to scope, it is still a relatively small percentage. But 5AMLD, which I believe we'll talk about, you know, in a few moments, you know, aligns very closely with FATF. So, you know, on that side, I think it is certainly a question in relation to how they're going to measure what progress has looks like in relation to those member states, because some of those member states obviously have not adopted any kind of crypto regulation yet. Some of them have an outright ban. We certainly in our engagements are seeing that they are exploring this more proactively in relation to their own regulatory regimes. But, you know, I think it will be interesting to see what comes out in relation to, you know, how they're being measured as a whole. So that's kind of the state of play, I would say, in relation to you know, implementation. And you know, in late June, / early July, you know, as you said, I think we expect to see some additional guidance come out, and, you know, potentially additional mechanisms will be placed if they find that they would like more progress to have been made, or if they want to expedite that process.
Yeah. It's still a relatively new industry. You know, I think the first Bitcoin transaction was like 11 years ago or something like that. So it's, you know, it's, the regulatory regime is always playing catch up on crypto, right? It's like, you know, and regulations take a long, long time to get into law, you know. How do you make of like the progress of the crypto industry as a whole? I know you put that in a wee bit and maybe focus a wee bit just more on like, what are the challenges do you think that are to come for the crypto industry, and what does it need to overcome to become, even though it's sort of tracking the mainstream, to become pure mainstream?
Yeah, well, I think that when you look at why these regulations have been adopted, right, from the industry itself, there was at least initially kind of from some this visceral reaction in relation to the impact, you know, on this technology that they've employed and the capabilities of it. When you really talk about regulation, you know, regulators and global governments are looking for financial integrity within a payment system, right, within an ecosystem. And I think what they were finding and, you know, in relation to, you know, the illicit activity that we've seen in the space is the fact that was lacking, right? And in part because, you know, there was in its infancy for crypto, kind of it was the Wild West, right? And because there was no regulation for this, you had bad actors that abused it, right?
Yeah.
And have continued to abuse it. So the regulation, they're looking to apply this to bring more integrity and protection at the end of the day to customers and consumers, right? That's one of the things they're trying to do, and to the general public, you know? certain kinds of bad actors, you know, if it's terrorism financing or if it's child exploitation or some of these things, you know, they impact human beings, right? And at the end of the day, a lot of this is about money. And I think when you speak to the industry, even if they are unhappy with regulations, I don't think anyone within the industry, it's my hope anyways, would want to facilitate that kind of activity on their platform.
No.
You know, when so circling back to your question, when it comes to, you know, what kind of hurdles or problems, you know, for I think for many in the space, because they don't maybe have a background in traditional financial services or specifically a background in compliance, right, in AML and CFT and regulatory compliance, understanding what that framework looks like successfully and applying that, things like, you know, doing an organizational risk assessment, having, you know, specific teams in place, having policies and procedures, you know, typologies and red flags, transaction monitoring, suspicious activity reporting, all of the kind of those core tenets is something that they're having to, you know, A, become familiar with and B, scale up within their organizations. And because many of them had not done that until regulation is being adopted, right?
Yeah.
They've been behind the curve. So they've been having to play catch up. I think from my perspective, we've been seeing kind of a great progress being made to that end, and that more, you know, organizations in the space than ever, you know, are coming to us, are consulting with us, are consulting with actual, you know, other advisory firms or others in relation to building out their compliance program.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think because they've been behind, it's just, it's playing catch up right now. And so I think that certainly has been, you know, a major hurdle.
Yeah, it's funny, like a lot of our clients actually proactively wanted to be regulated. You know, I'm sure we're there with you at FATF sort of arguing for it. And actually put in some systems and controls before they had to, you know, before they actually had to do it. But because the regulations weren't there, they maybe went 80% of the way there rather than 100% of the way there. And, you know, and it's that extra 20% that, as you quite rightly say, it's an investment in resource and time and money and everything. And, you know, I think it's only a benefit, you know, moving forward, but, you know, hopefully we'll see that. Like, the regulations obviously have come in the UK in the fifth money laundering directive. Can you, in January 2020, how's the impact been on firms as you've seen it and the wider industry, do you think?
Yeah, so you know, it came into effect. I think the impact on some firms is some firms have obviously chosen to either close up shop or, you know, to leave, which ties into, you know, regulatory arbitrage, which is a larger potential issue, certainly in relation to, you know, intergovernmental things like FATF, like 5AMLD in relation to their application, right, where they're looking for more lax jurisdictions to operate, which lends itself kind of to the question of why. And if they're sitting on the cost issue, you know, I don't know how well that argument stands up.
Yeah.
But generally, you know, certainly some member states have implementing. The good news, and I mentioned this previously, is that it aligns very closely with the FATF recommendations, right? I think, you know, when it comes to, you know, AMLD in general, you know, for the fourth AMLD, for example, as a benchmark, you know, only 11 member states managed to implement that on time, you know, and of those tardy 20 that had been identified, three were actually, you know, referred to the Court of Justice. So this is something historically that has been difficult to kind of uniformly implement effectively.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think when it comes to the member states, one of the things that we're seeing more broadly for regulation is you have the local regulators that are already regulating traditional financial services, right? And so one of the issues that we now see is potentially bandwidth, where they're bringing in this new industry, and maybe they do not have the bandwidth yet, right, to effectively regulate, you know, in relation to registration, in relation to licensing. And then there's, I think, you know, a maturity that is evolving rapidly, but is important in relation to those regulators having the domain expertise, right, to be able to effectively regulate the space. So there's a lot of knowledge building happening. There's a lot of engagement that we're having with these regulators in relation to suspicious activity reports and suspicious transaction reports when it comes to crypto. how can they effectively ingest these, right, and investigate these, you know?
Yeah.
The tools and things like transaction monitoring that there are forensics that they need to be able to do, right, to kind of work from what they're receiving in relation to crypto. So there are still some growing pains, but we have certainly seen some progress from some of these member states. And I think that, you know, again, you know, for financial integrity within the EU, once you see that adopted broadly, and once you see actual supervision occurring, you know, I think it actually certainly will help the EU substantially. Because one of the things that I didn't mention, one of the real values of regulation for those that are doing it right, right, on the private sector side, is it potentially becomes a competitive advantage for you, right? If you have the right kind of compliance program in place, if you're in place, if you're meeting the regulations, right? While in short term, those that are not may have less operating costs, for example. When yeah. they receive enforcement actions, right? When they receive fines, when they're shut down, if it's egregious, when these things happen, you know, your organization is going to continue to thrive and be successful. And I think that's certainly the right lens to look at this from.
It's short term pain for long term mm-hmm. gain, right? You know, yeah. The regulatory arbitrage point, I think, is fascinating, because although you do see regulatory arbitrage all over, right? You know, I'll not name countries, but there's places where you know, financial services firms tend to operate out of because the regime is easier or it costs less or whatever. I suppose, you know, if you look at more traditional finance, the thing is that the arbitrage kind of catches up with you, if you know what I mean. Like, the normal consumer understands, like, that if you're regulated in a certain country, your controls are more lax. And if you're regulated in the US or the UK or Hong Kong or, you know, at recognized financial services center, that their money should be more protected, you know. And that's really, whenever as a regime matures, that's tends to be what you see. I also think it's fascinating what you mentioned there was almost the regulators, like, educating themselves onto what it is. And we would have gone through this with the fintech boom in the last sort of 10 years. At the beginning, the regulators worry about, do they meet conditions of authorization? And that's what it is for crypto now, is like, do you meet the conditions of authorization? We're now 10 years post, and you see a lot of regulators now doing enforcement action on these fintech firms. You know, they've had their chance to mature, and the regulators now understand exactly what the sort of benchmark should be. So it'd be fascinating to see how the regulators deal with that in a few years' time, you know. But yeah, the arbitrage point is definitely one that it, I think, will be fascinating, but again, could be a short-term pain, long-term gain thing.
Yeah, on arbitrage, here's the interesting thing that I see when we talk about, you know, short-term gain but long-term problems in relation to regulatory arbitrage. The thing about crypto that's very interesting, right, is because of the transparency of the blockchain, you can see the activity flowing through these entities that choose to go to those more lax jurisdictions, for example, right, regulatory regimes. And so what I potentially forecast or foresee, right, is that if exchanges are choosing to go, if organizations are choosing to go to those jurisdictions because they don't care to implement, you know, more rigorous compliance, and in turn, a lot of illicit activity is flowing through those organizations, right? Because there's going to be a visibility there, potentially the unintended consequence that those jurisdictions may not be thinking about is if they become a nexus for all this illicit crypto activity, that potentially will mark them, right? And they may become a high-risk jurisdiction, right?
But that's just fascinating about your product. It's like you can point it at these wallets and almost, it's almost like a credit rating. Do you know what I mean? It's like, right, you're AAA, no, you're B, you're C, whatever. And it's sort of the same thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, so what we're able to do, you know, is we're able to identify real world entities and mark them, right, in relation to, you know, cryptocurrency transactions. And we're also able to identify exposure, right? What the exposure is in relation to other illicit activity that we've identified. So we're able to see that a transaction that's being processed has, you know, 70% exposure or 80% or whatever it is to a darknet market or to a mixer or to, a sanction related address, right? That's been included in a sanction set. You know, these are the kind of things, and it's kind of the power of our data and our tool. And when you're looking at that, you know, in relation to total volumes that an exchange is processing, for example, you're able to get a very good indicator and identify what the risk looks like, even by percentage, right? Going through an organization. It's very powerful. And, you know, in relation to what it can do, I think, for the industry is it means that at the end of the day, as the regulators begin to enforce this more and supervise this more effectively, you know, the bad apples are going to get weeded out eventually, sooner rather than later. They're not going to be able to continue to exist if they're processing a ton of illicit activity.
Yeah, there's direct comparison, right? You can have a look at Coinbase against a Kraken or whatever, you know. So there's the percentages. Well, they're direct comparisons, you know. So it's hard to argue with, isn't it? You sort of mentioned a topic which we're sort of hoping to move on to, which I get asked a lot about from our clients, which is the challenges on privacy coins and mixers. And the risks that are attached to these. Whenever I talk to our clients, I often compare, even traditional cryptocurrencies, but even privacy coins to cash. And it's like, well, you know, in some instances, you know, you can treat the risk similar as you would treat somebody walking in with a load of cash. And actually, in some other instances, you can use technology such as yours that makes that even less risky than cash. It's trying to get people's head around that, you know, if they're dealing with it. How are you guys dealing with privacy coins and how do you think is this one of the things that the regulators it's happened so quickly, the regulators it's going to take them a couple of years to catch up? Or
So it's a very timely question, because yesterday, you know, we announced support in relation to our monitoring of Zcash and Dash, in fact. So that's a new capability that we have. We cover those coins now as well. It's something certainly, you know, in relation to a lot of the work that we've done for investigators and for law enforcement and for regulators, they have had a large appetite, as you can imagine, for kind of insight and transparency into privacy coins and being able to track and trace privacy coins. So it's something that we have a lot of experience with, as you can imagine. And it's something that we're going to continue to develop and provide services for, certainly. I think when it comes to regulators and how they are viewing privacy coins, you know, and FATF really kind of dealt a significant blow to the privacy coin space and those providers by saying, you know, if as an exchange and an organization can't effectively mitigate the risk potentially associated with privacy coins, they should not support them on their platforms, right? Mm-hmm. And the thing is, you know, for some privacy coins, you know, that can turn on shield or turn off a shield, for example, you can have a transparency into them. For other, you know, others, there's less visibility that you're ever going to have. And so one of the things that we've seen since that's been released is, you know, we've seen kind of a flurry of exchanges delisting privacy coins. So it is going to continue, I think, to be an uphill battle for privacy coins. Yeah. But you know, potentially depending upon how they continue to kind of augment their technology, you know, assuming that there is a way when illicit activity has occurred for regulators and for law enforcement to be able to track and trace, then I think there's going to continue to be a place for them. We know that privacy is of utmost concern to this space as a whole, right? We know that many of the traditional coins are continuing to enhance their privacy features, right? Because it's something that the industry is very interested in. And it's really part of the ethos, right?
Where it's what started it, really. It's sort of keep it away from central governance and things like that, you know.
Exactly. So, you know, I think it'll be really kind of exciting to see where that space continues to go. And you know, in relation to what privacy coins are going to be very successful. It's a little harder for me to call. You know, I did have some concerns, do have some concerns about liquidity, you know, as a result of many of them being delisted and having these significant hurdles. You know, some local jurisdictional regulators are taking a, you know, a very hard approach on them that they just cannot, you know, really exist. So it will be interesting to see. But, it, you know, again, it's something we have a lot of experience on. It's something that we've done a lot of work on. We've supported many investigations in relation to privacy coins. So, you know, it's going to be fun to watch.
Cool. Listen, you're obviously in touch with FATF and a load of other regulators. Do you have any goals that you're setting yourself, sort of short, medium, long term, to like what do you think? Like, what's the sort of next step that you see for crypto in terms of regulation?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things that I didn't mention, but is so important, is as regulation is adopted and as it becomes something that is universal, which is what's so kind of amazing and valuable about FATF regulation, right? You know, you only have 39 core members, but with the FATF style regional bodies, it's over 200 jurisdictions globally, yeah. Right? It's a huge reach. When it is adopted effectively, right? And when the industry has that universal adoption that they've applied as well, you get more of that financial integrity. You will get the financial integrity and the safety and the security that global governments have not seen right yet or don't believe has existed yet. And when that happens, traditional financial services, my expectation is, are going to become more comfortable with crypto. Because right now, as you know, as many in the audience probably know, by and large, they are not, right? In relation to banking crypto and working with crypto with the space. And so if regulation is applied, if they see more safety and security in this ecosystem, then eventually what happens, my hope is that you have more institutional adoption. And when institutional adoption occurs on a large scale, crypto really becomes more of the fabric, right, of financial services and payments. And the things that then can be done become even greater. And so I see things going in that direction. I don't know what the timetable is. I speak with more financial institutions and banks than I ever have before. So yeah. I know they're starting to dip their toes, you know, but eventually when that happens, you know, digital payments become something so much bigger.
Yeah. It's different ball game, isn't it?
Yep. And so that is my expectation. You know, it's when they see that the crypto space has regulations and safety, like they perceive they have, and I said perceive within traditional financial services, when that happens, when it's kind of a level playing field, which is what this regulation kind of introduces, right? Regardless of your position on the fence in relation to the impact on the space, that's what it introduces. When that happens, I see that those relationships become easier to initiate. And eventually, you know, I think that will be fantastic for the space and for the financial ecosystem as a whole.
Yeah, I work with a number of firms, and what always I come back to is the people that are backing this in these firms, like and yourself included, Jesse. It is some of the most intelligent people and the most innovative people that you're ever likely to meet. And I can't see it not being a success because of that, because there's just so many people are now quitting working for a big tier one bank and joining a crypto firm because they see it as the future, which, you know, I'm very much in agreement. I hope that it is. Listen, Jesse, that's all for me. Thank you very much for joining me today.
It has been my pleasure. And, you know, I think it's a fantastic podcast. And yeah, thank you. Thank you again, Phil.
Super. Well, listen, I think the audience would agree. You're an absolute gent, and working in one of the most exciting firms that I know, right on the edge of cryptocurrency. Next week, we have Oliver von Landsberg-Sady, who is CEO of the BCB Group. Again, we'll be talking all things crypto, but more from a firm side. So I look forward to speaking to you next week. Thanks very much.